Hello and a very warm welcome to Central Stage. Good to have you with us. Now, early Wednesday morning last week, we woke up to the news that Obama was eventually re-elected after a quite long, bitter and expensive campaign, defeating his Republican challenger, Mitt Romney. Now, a week away, the question that many are asking is whether his re-election will change anything in the Middle East over the course of the next 4 years, particularly when it comes to the latest developments in Syria and elsewhere in the world of Islam. Welcome back. It's great to have you with us. Now, today we'll be getting insights from our two top guests. Now, in the studio here in Tehran, I'm delighted to be joined by top political analyst, Dr. Fuad Izzedi. It's a great pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Right. Now, let me just tell you that, as I said earlier, Dr. Fuad Izzedi is a top political analyst and thinker, particularly on issues affecting the Middle East and the world of Islam. Now, over the phone from Boston, we have the pleasure of being joined by a highly professional analyst. Dr. Kaveh Afrasiabi, welcome to Central Stage.
Thank you so much.
Great to have you. Now, Dr. Kaveh Afrasiabi is an established expert and political analyst on Iran foreign affairs and the Middle East. Now, we'll be back after a short break and we'll be talking about the latest development in the US politics, and we're referring to actually the re-election of Obama, and we'll be talking about its impact on the Middle East. So please do stay with Central Stage.
After a quite long, bitter, and expensive campaign, President Barack Obama eventually won a second term in the White House last week, scoring a clear victory over Republican challenger Mitt Romney. It's interesting to note that although nationwide popular vote remained extremely close, Obama comfortably managed to win the electoral votes needed in the state-by-state system used to choose presidents in the United States. International reactions came quite soon. But the reaction of Benjamin Netanyahu, who is very close to Mitt Romney but is thought to have a quite tasty relationship with the US president, drew lots of attention. Netanyahu had at times confronted Obama or even tried to undermine him by making direct relations with the Republican-dominated Israel-friendly Congress, and during the election campaigning had driven Obama into a tight corner by challenging his positions, including those on the recent developments in the Arab world. Despite that, after the results were out, the premier had to invite the US ambassador to Tel Aviv to his office to give his painful congratulations and issued a statement describing the bond between the US and Israel as rock solid. He also instructed his Likud party leaders to omit any criticism of Obama in their congratulatory messages. Another interesting reaction was that of the British Prime Minister David Cameron, which interestingly enough had to do a lot with the current situation in the Middle East. David Cameron said Britain and the United States should make finding a way to solve the Syrian crisis a priority following Obama's re-election. Having said that, it remains to be seen that Cameron exactly means by a way outside the UN or within its framework. More support for the rebels or even direct military action. Judging by how things have been developing over the last 19 months in Syria, it seems the way Cameron has in mind and wants Americans to follow may well be much easier visualizing than putting into action.
Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now we're talking about the re-election of Obama, and Dr. Izzedi, I'd like to start by a rather personal question. Now, when you got the news early Wednesday morning, what was your reaction? Did you breathe a sigh of relief, or did you just shrug your shoulders and said, it doesn't make any difference?
It was expected that Obama would win based on the public opinion polls, especially in the swing states.
Right.
The prediction was that he's going to win. So his win was not a surprise. And,
but it's a very close percent. I mean, the popular vote was very close, 51 to 49. But electoral vote, yes, you're right. But
right, but when they were calculating the electoral vote, you know, weeks in advance, you could see that he's ahead, and he was more or less always ahead. So that wasn't a surprise. And basically, whoever becomes the U.S. president will have some effect on the direction that the U.S. government will go toward. But there are other centers of power in the United States. For example, Congress is important. And there are other places that influence the foreign policy. And, you know, in general, there is not a lot of difference between Democrats and Republicans in strategy and main goals. They do differ in tactics and the ways they want to achieve their goals. But, for example, with regard to Iran, both candidates were harsh toward Iran and were actually competing with regard to who is going to pressure Iran more, who is going to be better friend for Israel.
There were some differences as well. You know, Romney was a very close friend of, you know, Netanyahu, and but Obama was not as close to Israel as actually Netanyahu was.
You said it rightly. Romney was a friend of Netanyahu, but the Israeli government is bigger than Netanyahu. So there are factions within the Israeli government that don't like Netanyahu. And the fact that you see there are some differences between the Barack Obama team and Netanyahu team goes back to the fact that Obama doesn't have a good relationship with Netanyahu, but he is more in line with other parties and other other people there. And so there are some differences. There are differences within the Democratic Party, there are differences between the Republican Party, and there's obviously going to be differences between the two parties. But in the main goals that they have, the main objectives that they have, they are more or less the same.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Now let's go to Boston, where we're joined by Dr. Kaveh Afrasiabi. Now, I'd like to put that rather personal question, the same question to you as well, Dr. Afrasiabi. Now, when you got the news early in the morning last Wednesday, what was your reaction? I mean, did you just shrug your shoulders and ignore the news, or actually, was it? I mean, did you all expect it as our other guests, or was it a bit of a surprise?
Well, to be honest with you, you know, I had a sigh of relief that this whole circus is over. The $6 billion show that, you know, they ritually put on every 4 years, and it ends up at the end being a contest between two establishment candidates with not too much substantive differences between them. You know, if you recall, Obama and Romney tried to outdo each other in their debate on foreign policy with respect to who's a better friend of Israel and bending over backwards to prove that, you know, they're better than their challenger on unconditional support for Israel.
Right.
And Mr. Obama, in order to deflect Romney's criticism over Israel, just a couple of weeks prior to the election, agreed to hold the joint U.S.-Israeli maneuver that lasted, you know, over a week or so. And that sent a signal to the Israelis that, you know, they shouldn't worry about Obama and, you know, his wavering on you know, support of Israel's position, etc. So, you know, personally, you know, although I live in the United States, I find the U.S. politics rather uninteresting, very predictable, and so forth. And so, you know, it wasn't a big surprise that Obama won, although Romney had some momentum. It was tied right prior to the hurricane storm, and that put a break on Romney's momentum and was to the advantage of Obama, who monopolized the airwaves for a few critical days prior to the election.
Right.
So I think the storm helped him a lot. Nevertheless, it was kind of obvious that on the electoral side, Obama would win. But as you said yourself, in terms of popular votes, he was very close, and he showed a divided nation with, you know, polarization deep into the political structure of American political life and so on.
Right. I mean, Dr. Afrasiabi, probably it's quite interesting to know that when it comes to popular votes, we see a divided nation. But, you know, in terms of what sort of image Romney is trying to present of the United States and the image that Obama is trying to present, I mean, they're actually, I mean, just consider, you know, Bush. The I mean, the image that he was trying to portray of the U.S., was of a country which it actually favors all wars and is, you know, trying to attack all, you know, every body or every nation which is on the way. So probably, to be honest with you, I don't understand why those who actually voted for Romney, because of the image that he's trying to portray, why is that the supporters of the Romney actually, what were they for?
I'm sorry, what was the last part of your question?
The last part is that actually the image that Romney was trying to portray of the U.S. was totally different from the image that Obama was actually was trying to represent. I mean, we're talking, I mean, probably our other guest is saying that the strategy is the same, but the tactics are different. We know that Romney was talking of wars and he was much harsher when it came to the, you know, some certain countries in the Middle East, but Obama was not like that. Don't you think that a president, I mean, if Romney was supposed to be president, the image of the U.S., even in Europe, would actually be quite different from the image that Obama is trying to present?
Well, of course, we would never know, but I think that, you know, Romney had a split image. On the one hand, he was catering to the extreme right wing of the Republican Party during the campaigns and sounding very hawkish on not only Iran, but, you know, China, Russia, and so forth. And then, you know, different Romney emerged during his debates with Obama, was more conciliatory and to the center. And I think as a result of that, Romney gained some additional votes.
Right.
Now, whether or not, you know, we would see the more hawkish President Romney or more centrist, you know, that's completely hypothetical. What is obvious is that, of course, compared to Obama, you know, Romney had a more hawkish research or image that was trying to portray more, you know, more activist or militant U.S. foreign policy that would have some incremental changes. But I don't think that overall we would witness too much of a change between the two.
Right. Thank you very much. You know, Dr. Izzedi, one of the, I mean, I was listening to one of the, you know, speeches of Romney, and he referred to China as a cheater. So I think it's a very strong statement, isn't it? When China is a very powerful country and you refer to China as a cheater, probably that's a bit too much, isn't it?
Well, I think Romney was trying to be a populist. There is a negative sentiment toward China within at least a segment of the U.S. population that sees all the cheap products that are replacing the American-made products, and the view that a lot of Americans have toward China is not very good. Some part of it is actually racism. Others has to do with the economy and other things that are going on. So Romney was trying to basically say things that is going to be liked by that segment of the population. And in general, Republicans have a harsher rhetoric than Democrats, and they are also more ideological in terms of Cold War mentalities and in terms of basically disliking other people, especially if they're independent and successful. And so that is the result of what you see in Romney's terminology and discourse.
Great, thank you very much indeed. Now, let's talk a little bit about actually the Middle East. We know that they had probably not absolutely similar approaches to the situation in the Middle East, but the question I'd like to put to you, Dr. Afrasiabi, is that what do you think basically Obama's re-election mean for the Middle East? There have been different views as to what it actually means. Some people saying that nothing will change, but what is your take on that?
Well, I wish I had a crystal ball and could correctly predict this.
Right.
There are, discussions, some of it leaked to the American media as to the thinking that's going on in Washington on various Middle Eastern issues, one of which is, of course, the deadlocked peace process and the absence of any movement whatsoever on the part of the Obama administration during the past 4 years on the question of Palestinian rights and the Palestinian-Israel conflict. And, we see some pressure on the part of Europeans, France in particular, on the U.S. to make a change on this and show some initiative. And it remains to be seen if Obama has the courage to do something about that. You know, he could appoint a new envoy, schedule a meeting and, summon the Israeli and Palestinian leaders to Washington, just like Jimmy Carter did back in 1977 and so
right.
on, So there are a number of options, I think, that they are considering, and I would expect some minimal movement on that front. So, that's one issue. Then there's the issue of Syria that we saw Secretary of State Hillary Clinton take some momentum in terms of restructuring the Syrian opposition and their meeting that just took place in Qatar, and now France has, recognized this as a government in exile, and I think that we're going to see a more assertive U.S. role on the Syrian situation in terms of, bolder moves to support the opposition and
Great.
Trying to oust Bashar Assad.
Right.
So those are two key issues, and then of course there's the issue of Iran nuclear crisis and the multilateral talks that are coming up and the options that the U.S. has for either bilateral dialogue or more conflict and tension.
Great. Thank you very much. Of course, we'll be talking about the issue of Syria, which is a very important one, and we'll see whether that the Obama's re-election will change anything when it comes to Syria. Thanks very much indeed for that. Now, let's take a short break. After the break, we'll be talking about some other issues concerning Obama's re-election, but first we'll ask our a knowledgeable guest in the studio whether Obama's re-election would change anything in the Middle East. So please do stay with us. Hello again. It's great to have you back with us. Now, Dr. Izzedi, we're still talking about the impact of Obama's re-election on the Middle East. Do you think that Obama's re-election will change anything in the Middle East?
Well, obviously, he is going to have some effect. And as I said, there are some differences between him and Romney in terms
right.
of tactics. There are a number of issues, as Dr. Afrasiabi referred to them.
Mm-hmm.
The Syrian question is obviously an important question. A few minutes ago, Obama had a news conference basically saying that the U.S. government is not going to recognize the newly formed
coalition
of Syrian opposition. The U.S. is worried that some elements within that opposition are not going to be in line with U.S. policies if the government of Bashar al-Assad falls.
Right.
And they should probably also remember what happened in Afghanistan when they supported some elements there during the Soviet invasion, and then these elements caused the U.S. difficulties later on.
Right.
But the U.S. government is not, doesn't have a very good memory, historical memory, and they seem to basically want to get the short-term results no matter what. And so they may fall for that same problem that they did for in Afghanistan. I think the whoever becomes the Israeli prime minister is going to basically determine how the Obama administration is going to deal with Israel. As you know, in January they have a they have an election, and we need to see if Netanyahu is going to come back or not. I don't think Obama wants Netanyahu back.
Right.
And so that's another important question that needs to be answered. The situation in Saudi Arabia is quite troublesome. The corrupt old kings and princes are dying off. And the issue of succession is something that worries the United States government, the British government.
Right.
And the people of Arabian Peninsula very much oppose the corruption that's going on there, and there is going to be some changes in that region, I think, soon.
But when it comes to Saudi Arabia, I think things have been quite quiet. It's not like the other countries. I mean, they've probably managed to.
They have managed to do that, but it's like 1978 in Iran. In 1978, no one really expected a revolution, and I, based on what I'm seeing, there is a lot of difficulty within that kingdom. And I think the Saudis are going to have the same difficulties as Shah did because they're as corrupt as Shah was.
Right.
There are obviously other issues. We have the question of Bahrain.
Right.
The double standard that the U.S. And the Europeans have toward Bahrain, with the corrupt rulers there torturing people, killing people on more or less daily basis, imprisoning a lot of people, and we have the British Prime Minister going and selling weapons to these people without any regard for human rights, and sort of showing the hypocrisy, the deep hypocrisy that the Western government suffer from. The issue of Pakistan is important, as you know. During the Obama presidency, the number of drone attacks increased when you compare it to the Bush administration. In Afghanistan, whoever has four stars on his shoulder also has an affair with someone, it seems, and they're having difficulty with all this news that's coming out with the different type of corruption that exists there. I think the person who is leading the U.S. forces there has to go back soon, given the scandals that are going on. There are obviously the issue of Iran. I think there are two camps basically within the Obama administration. One camp wants to have Iran surrendered itself by the end of 2013. And they are thinking about having a military attack on Iran sometime next year. This is one camp. The other camp really does not want that. And the camp that wants to confront Iran more has people like Dennis Ross that sort of were behind a lot of sanctions that we have seen in recent years. And people who don't like that idea are people like Joe Biden. If you remember the debate that Joe Biden had with Paul Ryan, he said quite interesting things in that debate when Ryan was questioning him with regard to Iran's nuclear program and sort of criticizing the Obama administration in that regard. He said four important things. Number one, he said Iran It does not have the highly enriched uranium that's necessary for a weapon. It's over 90%.
Right.
He said Iran doesn't have that. That's number one. Number two, even if Iran had that, Biden said, they don't have a weapon to use that.
Right.
In sort of put it in a weapon and make a bomb. That's number two. Number three, he said that even if they want to go toward weaponizing their program, we are watching them and we will know ahead of time. And number four, which is quite interesting, he said this is the assessment that our intelligence community and the Israeli intelligence community has with regard to Iran. And some of the words that he used, for example, he used this word malarkey, which is an Irish slang. It means, you know, baseless talk. He used the word loose talk. He used the word bluster when describing the other, you know, Ryan's position on Iran. So we have within the U.S. government people like that that really don't want to get into a war with Iran.
And sorry if I may come in here. I mean, you talked about actually there are different opinions of the two, you know, candidates and their deputies on basically what is the deadline, what is the deadline for, what is the red line basically for Iran. We know that also, you know, Obama was saying that his red line is that Iran actually has nuclear weapons. But Romney used to say if Iran has the capability to produce nuclear. So probably also in that case we see some differences.
The problem is Obama in the third debate that he had sort of wasn't quite clear about that. He was trying to compete with Romney in sort of to get on the good side of the Israeli lobby. So he wasn't so specific as as you said. And Dennis Ross had a speech a couple of days ago saying that Obama is actually with his camp within the administration. Of course, he is out of the administration, but he still has a lot of influence.
Right.
And so we have to wait and see who is going to be the next Secretary of State, who is going to be replacing Panetta, who is going to be replacing Petraeus. And that will answer some questions.
Great, thank you very much. Dr. Afrasiabi, do you think that the re-election of Obama will have any sort of different impact on its closest ally in the Middle East?
Well, that's an interesting question and difficult to predict, and that partly depends on who will win the Israeli election a couple of months from now. As much as a lot of pundits don't like Netanyahu, the fact of the matter is that he really made a strategic error with his caricature presentation at the United Nations in September, and that backfired and put the whole Israeli strategy against Iran, in a limbo, I should say. And if Netanyahu, wins re-election, I think that his Iran policy will have a lot of trouble, So it would be better for Iran to deal with Netanyahu than a fresh face who can restart the U.S.-Israeli dialogue on this and other related matters,
Right.
So, a lot depends on that election. I think that the U.S.-Israeli relation right now has a lot of problems, and from the vantage point of the Israeli lobby, they need fixers. So don't be too surprised if you find some, very prominent pro-Israeli voices in the restructuring of the second Obama administration, particularly in the foreign policy team. Right now there appears to be a movement toward getting, Senator John Kerry on board, and we don't know if Hillary Clinton will definitely step down or not, And I think if she does, it won't be because Obama doesn't want it, it's because she wants to run in 2016, So there will be a lot of continuity, I think.
Right.
Some incremental adjustments and changes.
Great. But Dr. Afrasiabi, let's talk a little bit about Syria. We know that turbulence in the Middle East has been commonplace since a couple of years ago, but particularly taking central stage is the Syrian crisis. Now, how do you think, Dr. Afrasiabi, that Obama will act actually in second term in Syria? Will he authorize more support of the Syrian rebels or even direct U.S. military intervention, do you think?
think that's the most likely possibility, that the U.S. will get more involved and the scenario, you know, become more militarized in the near future and so on. And, you know, right now, you're already witnessing the, you know, terrible consequences of a deadly quagmire there. And
right.
I think this will linger on for some time because, you know, for one thing, at the U.N., everything is blocked because of the, you know, China-Russia veto. And so the U.S. is, you know, working with some of its European partners for a coalition of the willing to create a buffer zone and no-fly zone and so on and so forth, you know. And it all depends on the balance of forces on the ground as to, you know, how far the rebels will succeed in terms of dislodging Bashar Assad and his power in various parts of Syria, you know. So I think that will be a determining factor. And right now things are not going too well for either side, you know. That's why we have a quagmire. But it's a deadly one and a costly one for particularly the Syrian regime that's under tight sanctions and can't run business as usual, you know.
Right.
So in a way, I think time is on the side of the rebels if the government in Damascus can turn the tide to its favor. I don't know if Dr. Azedi would agree with this assessment. I'd like to hear his response to that.
Right. Thank you very much indeed. Dr. Azedi, I'd like to just now ask you to talk a little bit about British Prime Minister's comment after Obama was re-elected. It's very interesting. I mean, he said that Britain and the United States should make finding a way to solve the Syrian crisis a priority following Obama's re-election. So what do you think David Cameron actually mean by that?
Well, the expectation that the West has, some of these Western countries, US, UK, France had, was that the government, the current government of Syria, would be overthrown many months ago. And they find themselves in a very peculiar situation with all the efforts that they have put in, with all the money of the Saudis and the Qataris, with all the financial and military help of the Turkish government. They have not been able to overthrow the Syrian government.
Right.
And they're frustrated. Cameron's statement could be referring to the idea that we couldn't do anything in the first Obama administration. Maybe we can do something.
But
in
it's
the
been
second.
A priority, hasn't it? I mean, Cameron is saying that we need to make it a priority. I think it's been on their, you know, high on the agenda of both the British and American governments.
They have done a lot, and when they use that language, they basically want to say, the reason we haven't been successful is that this wasn't a priority. Now we are going to make it a priority. Now, if they fail again, I'm not sure what we're going to say next.
Right.
They're going to get in difficulties.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Now let's go to Boston, where we're joined by Dr. Afrasiabi. Let's talk a little bit about the problems at home. We know that the same problems that Dr. Obama in his first term are still there to confront him again. He faces a difficult task of tackling $1 trillion actual dollar annual deficit, reducing a $16 trillion dollars of national debt, overhauling expensive social programs, and dealing with a gridlocked Congress that kept the same partisan makeup. So will he be able to deliver on the home front, do you think?
Well, you know, Obama faces the same difficulty in terms of making legislation as he did, you know, toward, you know, the end of his first administration, which is that, you know, Republican-dominated House of Representatives.
Right.
So that invites deadlock and you know, a basically hampered administration who wouldn't be able to advance his economic agenda as a result of the Republican dominance of the House of Representatives, you know.
Right.
So there's a lot of discussion going on right now between the House leadership and the White House in terms of what's called fiscal cliff and so on. And I think that this will drag on for some time, and it will definitely, you know, create some sort of a war of attrition between the two sides, given the very sharp political polarization witnessed during the presidential campaign. You know, even though Obama in his post-election victory speech talked about reconciliation and America being one family and so forth, but you know, there's a lot of bad blood that was reflected in the political ads and so forth, and that won't go away overnight, you know. So there's the issue of taxes, and Obama wants to increase some taxes, and I think that he will succeed in that, you know. But on other issues, you know, first of all, Obama didn't really in his campaign produce any comprehensive package of economic restructuring or reform that he would implement. Now, he was rather vague about it, you know.
Right.
So he has to come up with some, you know, some economic formula to address the rampant unemployment and so on, you know.
Excellent.
So I think I think that's the main issue.
Right. Thank you very much indeed. Now, let me just tell you, our dearest viewer, that you can watch us live on the internet. I'm just going to give you some addresses that you can use to watch us. You know that we've been facing some problems. Some of you may have faced some problems watching us on, you know, Hotbird. So hopefully we'll have that settled. But until that time, you can watch us at english.sahatv.ir/live. If you want to use iOS, that would be english.sahatv.ir/iOS. And if you want to use Android, that would be english.sahatv.ir/Android. So just please make sure that you watch us, and we very much look forward to your feedback. Now, Dr. Izzedi, we just have about 1 minute left to the end of the show, and I'd like you to tell us how you actually see the Middle East 4 years from now.
4 years in 1 minute? That's a difficult task.
Okay, 1 minute and 20 seconds.
Okay, that's better. I think with the Islamic awakening and the people's movement, this part of the world is actually moving toward the right direction.
Right.
And the fact that the Americans spend more than anybody else in terms of their military expenditure and cannot get anything done, the things that they want to get done, they cannot get them done.
I want to retract my statement, 20 seconds, because I just got it wrong. But you just have 20 seconds. Sorry.
Okay.
I apologize.
I think the future is actually bright. I think the people have awakened. They are not afraid of their corrupt governments.
Right.
And the Americans cannot continue the same old practices.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate that. So I'd just like to thank again my top guests, Dr. Kaveh Afrasiabi and Dr. Fahd Izzedi, both established political experts and analysts. It was great to have you with us. Thanks very much for your comments, your feedback, and your input is always very welcome. I'd also like to thank you, our dearest viewer, for having taken the time to watch this week's Central Stage. So I'd like to finish off by thanking you again and also thanking our both guests. Thanks very much indeed for watching, and please do join us again next week. Thank you very much. Great to have you with us. Thank you.